Each year, Americans spend billions of dollars on hair, curling it, dyeing it, and adding exertions. To achieve our ideal look, we turn to the sacred space that is the salon. Since 2006, Candace Taylor has traveled to salons around the U.S., documenting the American salon. Her multimodal project, American Hair, focuses on how hair intersects with culture and identity in the United States. Candace, who is the current Archie Green Award recipient at the American Folklife Center, tells Current State's Emmanuel Berry that her fascination with hair stems back to her childhood.
Hair to me is really important because it can make you or break you. And it's something that I think most of us have experienced at some point in our lives. Like, what are we going to do with our hair? So it's always been an ongoing question for me since I was a child. And I remember at the age of six, sitting at my mother's kitchen table getting my hair pressed. And so it started at a very young age, that roller coaster. And how my hair changed throughout my life largely determined where I was in my life. And my identity was really closely connected to that. So they just always seemed to be in congruence with each other. And I thought, you know, I wanted to hear about other people's stories as well.
What inspired you to do this project?
Well, I started this project in San Francisco. I had been going to a salon for many, many years, and it was a black salon in a transitional neighborhood. And I was shocked after realizing, after being there for about 10 years, realizing that I had never seen anybody of any other ethnicity walk through the door. There were only black women there all the time. And my hairstylist was incredible, and she was very generous. And there was a white woman who came in one day that was, it was so out of the blue. It was so, you know, she walked in and she just wanted a wash and set. And my hairstylist turned her away and said, no, you know, I can't do that. I can't do it today. Or I don't, she was very nice to her, and the woman left. And after the woman left, my hairstylist said, I don't do white hair. And I was shocked. I was so shocked because in every other area of my life, there were so many different kinds of people. It was in San Francisco. Yeah. It's the most diverse place on the planet, practically. So it was really shocking to me to know that this woman had been turned away because of her race. Mm-hmm. And I knew that my hairstylist wasn't racist, but what I gathered was that she was somehow protecting that space, the intimacy, the ritual that happens in that space, the conversations that were happening in there. And that's when the project started for me, because I was basically looking from under the hairdryer. I had the perfect vantage point to just watch. For about 6 years after that, I just watched very closely what was happening in the salon and what was so special and so different and that was worthy of, you know, being patrolled and protected from
turning people away from business.
Right, yeah. Right. And a lot of these places don't advertise. I mean, they have a very close-knit community that they serve, and that's who their allegiance is to. But I started to wonder, you know, are other salons like this, like are Latino salons, especially when you've got language, you know, people who speak another language who are more comfortable not speaking English. Mm-hmm. You know, the salon can be a very comforting place for the particular culture. So I wondered about Japanese salons, Pakistani, and that was what started the ball rolling. And that's when I realized that, you know, black hair always has been a thing in our culture. It's talked about pretty regularly, and it has been for probably about 50, 60 years. But what I thought was more interesting was to look at how other ethnic salons are and where the similarities and the differences in those other salons. And so that's what inspired me to write the grant for the Library of Congress to do the field research.
So for years now, at this point, you've traveled around documenting these spaces. How did you find them? How do you said they're these kind of intimate, hidden places. How did you come about looking for these spaces?
Well, they were difficult to actually access, not as hard to find. I mean, I love my GPS. Anytime I go to any city, I can just get off the beaten path and just, you know, cruise the streets and see these places. I mean, they're in plain sight. They're kind of hidden in plain sight, right? So getting in them and getting access and getting permission to actually do the work I want to do has always been challenging. And I started the project in 2006. And since then, I've almost abandoned the project twice because it was just so hard to get to convince these small business owners to let me come in with camera equipment and ask a bunch of questions and photograph their regular customers. They didn't want to alienate their customers. They didn't want to change the environment or the intimacy of that space. It completely shifts when an outsider comes in. Mm-hmm. So it was challenging. But at this point, it's been worth the challenge. I'm glad I stuck with it.
For the hair salons that you have been to, what have you learned about different types of hair and different ways of styling?
Well, I definitely learned that hair is different. And I mean, you can see it, right? Mm-hmm. It's pretty obvious. People have different kinds of hair. And when you're talking about ethnicity and hair, it gets complicated because a lot of the stylists don't want to say that there's black hair or white hair or Asian hair because it is a very limiting, you know, that's not necessarily true because every ethnicity has every kind of texture of hair, right?
There's exceptions, yes.
So there's always exceptions. But generally speaking, you know, I did study anatomy and I really looked at the anatomical structure of different types of hair, whether it's excessively curly and coarse or Asian hair that tends to be very straight and shiny. And there is a physiological reason why the hair behaves differently in different circumstances and with different products. And so the stylists who are more well-versed in those areas know that hair type very well. And that's why a lot of people go to a particular stylist of, you know, usually sharing their same ethnicity.
We spend so much time and money on hair, so it's clearly important. But why is it important, and why is it so central to our understanding of who we are as individuals?
Yeah, hair can make or break you, for sure. And it's so closely tied to our identity, whether it's through, you know, politically, culturally, socially, personally, through the media. There's so many different factors that play into the choices we make around our hair. And the choices that we make have consequences, for better or for worse. I mean, they can actually help you. They can propel you into a different place in your personal life or your career, or they can pigeonhole you into something that maybe you're not comfortable with. So, you know, there was a study out of Yale several years ago where a scientist put five different hairstyles on a computer-generated woman. The same woman had five different hairstyles on her. And she looked so radically different that the participants of the study didn't recognize that it was the same woman. And so the scientist asked, you know, how wealthy is this woman? How intelligent is she? And they gave radically different answers solely based on her hairstyle. And I think that speaks a lot to how important hair is and the choices that we make around it in our lives.
Do you think most Americans are conscious of that importance that we place on hair?
I think, you know, obviously, like you said, we spend a lot of money on it. It's a billion-dollar industry. It's almost a recession-proof industry, according to Forbes. 5 years ago, they said that. So obviously, we think it's important because we're spending our money. Mm-hmm. People will put aside their hair money as though it's a utility bill. I mean, it's that critical to a lot of people. But I don't know if there's a consciousness around the choices that are kind of made for you based around how you look in terms of your hair. And that is shifting, though. Even, you know, dreadlocks is a style that has been around for so long. So many different kinds of people have been wearing dreadlocks, but finally they're more accepted in the mainstream. Mm-hmm. My cousin got a job at Chase Bank right out of college wearing dreadlocks. And there was a time 20 years ago, your parents would say, no way, you know, if you're going to work in a bank, you have to look a certain way. And so I think, you know, our culture is kind of loosening the reins around that and allowing for different hairstyles. But there's still a lot of limitations and ways that we can change our choices around our hair.
What kind of influence does media as a whole have on the way we decide to style our hair or the way we feel about our hair?
Well, there's a lot of pressure in the media to... Before it was, there was a lot of pressure to wear, especially for Black women, to wear their hair straight. But there's a lot of women now, I think, that are just being so real in the media about the fact that their hair isn't real. Which is really liberating.
By the way, everyone.
Right. I don't know if you saw that episode on The Talk. I mean, all the women at the table just ripped out all their hair extensions and their wig. Every single woman at the table had fake hair on, either a full-on wig or an extension. Mm-hmm. So it's shifting. But the media has always been a big factor in terms of, you know, wanting the pressure to be blonde can be very overwhelming. And that's one thing I'm learning, too, about, especially with hair. It's always been assumed that Black women have such a harder time with their hair. But I've learned that being blonde costs a lot of money. It's a lot of maintenance. It's a huge commitment as well. So I think even though there are big media influences, we are starting to be able to write our own story around it. So that's exciting as well.
How should that dialogue be expanded? We talk about good hair, we talk about bad hair. You've mentioned, you know, we need to add blonde hair to that conversation. What else needs to be going on in that dialogue about hair in America?
Part of this reason why I did this project was to have a deeper discussion about race and identity and culture. And I think through the lens of hair, it becomes so much easier because hair is such an innocuous, a seemingly superficial thing. Mm-hmm. And it's a fun thing. It's, you know, it's an intimate thing. It's a sensitive thing. And so because it encompasses all of these feelings, I think it's a really great opportunity to talk about why we make certain choices or what outside pressures there are, whether they're cultural, sometimes based in religion. I documented an Orthodox Jewish wig salon in Brooklyn. And the choices that people make around their hair, I think, are just so intimate and so personal to their, not only to their identity, but also to their culture. And so I think having an opportunity to talk about those things and to generate a discussion about identity and culture is really exciting to me, because I think when you start to talk about race or ethnicity, people get fearful. They feel like they're going to say the wrong thing. They feel like they're going to offend somebody. And I have to say, I mean, even I was in a really rural area in Louisiana, mm-hmm. with a Cajun woman who was, after we had been with each other for most of the day, at the end, she says, oh, you know, do you mind if, can I touch your hair? And she was so nervous. And I said, of course, you know, and she touched it. And she was like, I've always wanted to do that. And she's like, but I didn't want to offend anybody. And, you know, and I wasn't offended. I was, you know, I felt honored that she asked, that she felt comfortable enough with me to ask and that we could have a discussion. She was like, oh, it's so soft. And I always wanted to know what black hair felt like. And So I really want to take an opportunity to have this free, this freedom around talking about these things. And if the discussion can start with hair and then fall into something a little deeper and a little more risky and a little more honest, then that's all I can ask. That's really the whole point for me.
Candace Taylor is an independent scholar and current Archie Green Award recipient at the American Folklife Center. You can join the conversation about American hair at her website, tailormadeculture.com. Also, Taylor will be discussing beauty shop culture and the labor of hairdressing as part of the Our Daily Work, Our Daily Life's Brown Bag series at MSU. You can hear a presentation today at 12:15 at the MSU Library. For Current State, I'm Emmanuel Berry.